Blog Talk Radio.
Today's early bird's secret password is Australorp.
When you find yourself in danger, when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking, there is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, brought to you by Tractor Supply, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens, and national spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds program. Today is Thursday, September 19th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our newly designed website, chickenwhisperer.com, or you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Tractor Supply.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing. Introducing the Chicken Fountain, a new way to water your flock. The Chicken Fountain will change your life and keep your chickens healthier by providing clean, fresh water every time. No more daily cleaning of dirty chicken waterers. This semi-sealed system keeps every drop of water fresh and clean. Proudly made in the USA, the Chicken Fountain will provide your flock with fresh, clean water for years to come. To order your Chicken Fountain, visit chickenfountain.com. That's chickenfountain.com. Do you provide a heat source for your backyard chickens in the winter? In most cases, it's not necessary. But if you choose to provide a heat source for your backyard chickens, it's imperative to use a safe and effective heat source, and the only one I recommend is the Sweeter Heater. The Sweeter Heater is a safe, completely sealed, washable, non-breakable, energy-efficient, long-lasting, and reliable specific area heater that comes with a 3-year warranty. Ditch the dangerous heat lamp this season and invest in the only heater I recommend, the Sweeter Heater. Purchase the Sweeter Heater online at sweeterheater.com. That's sweeterheater.com.
Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer, here to tell you that if you have backyard poultry, nothing is more important than making sure your feathered friends are safe from infectious poultry diseases. Learn the simple steps to keep your birds healthy by visiting this website, healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov. That's healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov.
A message from the USDA.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All right. Thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Got a great show lined up for you today. We have poultry scientist and professor, Dr. Bridget McCrae, PhD. She'll be joining us here shortly. She's got a great topic today. Last time we had this topic, thousands tuned in. It was a very, very interesting show, and it was really poultry research translated. And so, you know, a lot of times we'll share studies on our Facebook page, and it's a lot of for us lay folks, us little minions, it's just kind of way over our pay scale, way over our head, and we don't understand what it really means for us or what the study was done. And it's just fascinating since my relationship with Dr. McCrae, and for probably going on 3 years now, it really changes your way of thinking. And she's normally on my speed dial whenever I have any questions about studies that I see or read or comments or things. And she's a big part of our blogbusters segments when we have those, the bad information that is so often found on blogs and forums. And we often have episodes called Blogbusters with both Dr. McCrae and the chicken doctor, Peter Brown, kind of dispel the myths and things like that that we see. But today, she's going to bring with us, like she did last time, several poultry research studies, and she's going to translate them into what it really means and how the study was developed and what it might mean for us, the small-scale backyard chicken keeper. We have a great lineup all week. We had Monday, the chicken doctor with Peter Brown. On Tuesday, we learned even more about using essential oils around the homestead, which was wonderful. Yesterday was supposed to be garden-wise living with Arlena. About 3 hours before the show, I got an email from her. She was going to try to do the show, but she was catching a flight to get to her daughter's wedding. And so, hey, as we know, family comes first. So no worries there. It's a last-minute cancellation. I apologize about that. But nonetheless, today we're very honored to have Dr. McCrae on, which is going to be great. And can't wait to bring her on live. So got to love that. As you know, Thursdays are our last broadcast of the week, but we will return next Monday. In fact, next Monday, another great episode with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, and we're going to do a little bit more research into salmonella. Probably about a month ago, 3 weeks ago, I was posting some information and studies and new details about salmonella on our Facebook page. And as always, it gets tons and tons of information. In fact, one lady had mentioned, I guess you saw it on a blog or forum, where Marans, you may pronounce it Marans or Marins. I know I've heard it pronounced all three of those different ways. Their eggs do not contain salmonella. They just don't, because the eggshell is so thick. Well, again, nice little phone call to Dr. McCrae talking about that specific issue. And got some information from her of like, yeah, what about the salmonella carried by the bird that's inside the egg before the shell is even applied? So, again, bad information from the blogs and forums. But this Monday with the chicken doctor, Peter Brown, we're going to be talking all about salmonella. We've done salmonella in the past. We've had the CDC on. We've had the FDA on, the whole nine yards. But we're going to get a little bit different with salmonella and talk about that and the risk, the different types of salmonella. People always talk about, well, I always wash my eggs, or the bloom keeps it out of the egg. But there's many different types of salmonella, some from the bird's poop, or that are contained in the bird's poop and waste matter that, yeah, may be on the outside of the egg. The bloom, of course, is protecting the egg from a lot of bacteria from entering the eggshell. But what about all the bacteria or the salmonella that's already in the egg from the process of it being developed inside the chicken? You know, it's in the yolk. And then all of a sudden the egg forms around it. No matter how you wash that egg, That's why cooking is, it is so important. So we're going to talk about salmonella. I'm very excited about that next week, Monday, when we bring on Peter Brown, the chicken doctor. And then let's see what else we got. We'll have, next Wednesday, we've got the Quail Lady, All About Quail, with Alexander Douglas coming on next Wednesday, one of our new popular shows. And then it looks like Thursday, the 26th, we'll have another episode of Backyard, Back Home Magazine, with Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine. That'll be on the 26th. If you'll give me just a second, I'll try to find out what that episode is going to be about so you can start marking that on your calendar next week. So let me try to see if I can find where he sent that list over. And let's see what we've got. It'll be, looks like, Making Mead, which is honey wine, basically, at home. Making Mead, honey wine, in parentheses, at home. And so that's going to be our episode with Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine, next Thursday. So it looks like we've got some great shows and guests lined up for you next week, and we're definitely looking forward to that. So let me get over here to the switchboard. It's about 11 after. We'll give her just a few more minutes, and I may give her a call to see if we can reach Dr. McCray. She may have gotten caught in a late meeting, or maybe one of her classes ran late. So no worries. We'll just have a few more minutes, and then we'll try to bring her on. Christmas Chick in the chat room was asking, if she shares my Facebook status. That's often the link doesn't share either, because often I put the link down in the comments section. And so instead of placing it in the post, because the way Facebook works, it's very interesting how controlling they are about when you post, who sees it, who doesn't see it. Even with 71,000 fans on Facebook, it's still Facebook. It's not free enterprise, if you will. They are so controlling about who sees what. I've tried to tweak it where I've noticed, because I've posted a link without having a link, or I've made a post with the link embedded in it, and then I've made the exact same post 60 seconds later without a link, and then I put the link down in the comment section, and literally, and this is no exaggeration, maybe 10 times the amount of people and fans actually see the post without the link embedded in it, but I can put the link down in the comments section. So I don't know why, Facebook being controlling, acting like Big Brother, whatever it is, I do not know, but over the years, watching how that works, seeing the number of the reach you get with different types of posts, the time of day you post, how many times a day you post. It's very interesting. It's almost a science just to use Facebook. That's why I'm glad I don't just have Facebook and rely on Facebook. You know, we've got Twitter, we've got the book, we've got the tour, we've got the speaking engagements and things like that, because you just cannot rely on Facebook for anything. So it's just kind of one of those things. So I am going to I've got about 13 after. I'm going to go ahead and try to get in contact with Dr. McCray and see if we can get her on the line or get an answer. Maybe she, again, is in a late meeting. She is a professor, so meetings can run late when she's at that teaching at that level. And or maybe she just let's see what else we got here. Had a class run over. If she was teaching that, maybe she's helping a student after class, which, of course, takes precedence. So if you'll give me a second, I will. What I'll do is I'll go to commercial break, but there possibly may be some dead air there while I try to get in contact with her off air and see if she's running late or needs to cancel or just maybe she just forgot. She's human too, you know. So give me just a second, and I'll see if I can't contact her. And again, sometime during this period, there may be some dead air, but I will be back to give you an update. All righty, stand by, everybody.
When you need an incubator, think Brentsy, the incubation specialist. Grency has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Grency.com. Grency spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Grency.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg candlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Grency. Technology you can trust. Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry. From rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams, Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com. Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com. Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at MountHealthy.com, that's MTHealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Hey, just look at the bright side when Dr. McRae calls in here in just a few minutes. There'll be no more commercial breaks for the rest of the show because we played them all. So no more interruptions. Normally we break right after the intro and then normally about 12:45 and then 1:15. But, hey, not today. We're going to hear all about the poultry research translated. So just stay with us. She is on her way. I guarantee it. Well, maybe we're just destined not to have a show today because now I have zero switchboard. I don't know if it's a problem of Blog Talk Radio out of New York or if it's a internet issue, but I have zero screen. We've got actually 50 open phone lines. Maybe something's coming on here. But maybe we're just destined not to have a show today. Who knows? But she may be even called in right now, and I do not know it because I don't see a switchboard because I don't know if it's a BTR area problem in New York or if it's a local internet issue. But we're okay. Here we go. Something's happening. See if we can get over here. Hey, live radio. You just never know what's going to happen. We've been very, 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 very lucky here lately. So maybe between yesterday's show and today's show, everything's trying to get back and get back at us for having such great connectivity for the last while. Okay, here we go. Let's try this. Okay, I think we got everything back up and working, and so let's get back over here, and we'll go to the phone line. So we almost had we had a different problem yesterday, and that was a Blog Talk Radio issue out of New York, and today we were having, I don't know, some other issue, but it seems to have corrected itself, so we'll head over here to the phone lines and go ahead and bring on our guest today, Dr. McRae, Ph.D. Hey, Doc, how you doing?
Hey, good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm glad you can hear me and I can hear you. Yesterday we had a problem with our switchboard, and so live during the show I had to contact and open up a help desk request with Blog Talk Radio, and they finally told me how to bypass the problem where our guests could actually, it was just day before yesterday, could hear us, and so we got that problem. So up until I brought you live, I didn't know if they had fixed that problem on their end, but obviously they have. And then in the last 2 minutes, I've had an issue with the switchboard and the audio clips. But other than that, I think we're good to go. I can hear you. You can hear me, which is always good. And I think all of our listeners can hear now, so that's even better. And so we can get started with kind of a poultry research translated. Now, that last time I did the show, it was fascinating. We had huge listener turnout. And so we're anxious to hear more about it today, because now I post a lot of studies on Facebook, or whenever I see something I'm not sure about, I'll send it to you to get your opinion on it. Or, you know, a lot of times people read these studies from Poultry World, Poultry Net, and all these other places, and they just, you know, it's over our pay scale, and no clue what they're talking about, or end result was, or why it affects us, or backyard poultry, or things like that. So it's always good on occasion to hear some, and then let them, again, be translated or dumbed down for me and maybe some other folks out there, so we know exactly what the study means.
There's a lot of different research out there, and there's a lot of niches that people can take when they're doing research with poultry. Some people are really into genetics. Other people are really into nutrition. And so there's a lot of different things out there that could be translated. And so when I open up my journals that I get on, you know, some come monthly, some come quarterly, you come across some of these titles where you're like, ooh, that sounds cool. I'm going to read that because, you know, it's something new. It's out of my realm of understanding. Or something, there might be something new being tried in my my area of interest. So one of the first things that I brought up is kind of an older journal article, 2005, and it's called The Effect of an Essential Oil Mix Derived from Oregano, Clove, and Anise on Broiler Performance. And I know a lot of your listeners are very interested in using natural ingredients to help their birds, and a lot of your listeners let their birds wander around loose in their yards, and they might come across some of these plants, maybe an oregano plant, or you know, they might feed their chicken spice cake that has anise in it or something. You know, what are some of these things doing to their birds? So here's an actual study where they looked at an essential oil blend or mix, and they wanted to see, you know, is it a natural growth promoter? Can you use it instead of antibiotics? Because that's a big concern among consumers, right, Andy?
Absolutely.
And so...
I had posted, just this week, maybe in fact it was on the 17th, so a couple of days ago, about the CDC stating deadliest drug resistance comes from hospitals, not farms, and then you had to read this and kind of figure out what they were trying to say, if it means anything.
Yeah.
And talking
about...
And
then it made it onto the news, and they made it sound like the farms were to blame. Just in one sentence, this one lady said it, and I'm like, thanks a lot, lady.
Exactly. I know.
Because, whether or not she intended it to... Or she just didn't care. It was just like, thanks. Because that's going to affect a lot of different types of farmers.
We've talked about it before, where some of the farms are using studies now with oil of oregano versus antibiotics. And I think a lot of people, maybe I can go out on a limb and say I think the majority of people, that's just my opinion, from ones I've talked to, if you have a sick animal, treat it. I don't think anybody has a problem with that for the most part. If it's, you have to treat something, one animal, but to treat all of them with antibiotics as a regimen all
as
the
a
time,
growth promoter.
A lot of people don't care
for that thought. A lot of people don't understand it, number one, Andy.
Yep.
Maybe not the majority of your listeners, but I'm talking about the general population in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them don't want to know. They just want the hamburger on their plate.
Wasn't that the deal with Roxrasone, too, is that it was, even though it was carcinogen and arsenic-based, that the scientists, I'm guessing, found out that it really helped with
growth. It was a growth promoter.
And so they were using that. So, of course, somebody finds out, and then now they're getting away from that, from just using it as a daily regimen or what have you in their feed. So I guess antibiotics kind of same thing. We're trying to get away from that now.
It was an antibiotic, I think. I might be wrong.
Okay.
But let's talk about this particular study instead of making your listeners come on, people. So they chose to do a study with 250 broiler chickens. So they had five groups that they split those 250 birds into. The control group, of course, doesn't have any additives in the feed. And it's not given any antibiotics. That's the control, okay? Then you got a group that gets 100 parts per million of that essential oil mix into their feed. Another group gets 200 parts per million, and another group gets 400 parts per million. Then the last group, group number five, they're going to get an antibiotic that they normally get. Like, it's called avalamycin. And the diets were prepared daily, and the experiment was 35 days long. And they looked at the feed intake for the birds. Is the treatment, the number of parts per million, affecting the amount of feed that the chickens eat? Well, the answer was no. They were all similar. But they did notice that the highest daily live weight gain was seen in the group that got 200 parts per million of the essential oil mix. Remember, that's oregano, clove, and anise. The next group that got the highest daily weight gain was the 100 part per million group. And then the control group, followed by the group that got 400 parts per million EOM, or essential oil mix. So that means you kind of optimize things. You optimize daily live weight gain in the group that got 200 parts per million. But once you went up to 400 parts per million, benefits weren't necessarily there. Maybe it was just a little too much.
Where was the group that got the antibiotics, the traditional antibiotics?
That was group five. So it went the 200 part per million group, then the antibiotic group, then the 100 part per million group, then the controls, then the 400 part per million group.
gotcha.
And when you design experiments like this, you never quite know how it's going to, you know, turn out. What they found out was that 200 part per million group, they got about, their daily live weight gain was about 16% over the control group and 8% over the antibiotic group. They got even got
that's
a better...
That's significant, 16%. In the chicken, that's pretty significant, isn't it?
In this study, it was, yes. Yeah. If you compared it to some other essential oil mixes or maybe some other antibiotics, it might not be. The feed conversion ratio was also improved. That was improved by about 12% over the control group and 6% over the antibiotic group, which is nice. That is nice, yeah. A nice improvement. So, you know, maybe there's something to be considered with this particular blend. And to talk, you know, I know some of your listeners know more about particular essential oils than I do, so I will share with you what they wrote down about the essential oils. The oregano oil, that was 90% purity. The clove oil was 85% to 90% purity. And the anise was 87.5% to 90% purity. And all the diets were balanced, and you know, they had the birds in pens, so there were replications for each group. Okay? So that there was an adequate number of replications, because as I've told you before, anything can happen once. But that's why we have replications, so that we can see if it was a fluke or if there really is a trend. So I thought that was fairly interesting. It tends to be one of those subjects that catches my eyes. You know, I've got, you know, there's other herbs that you could do, sage, fennel. You know, there's other herbs that some people would investigate, but I see a lot of these studies coming out of universities overseas. This one came from Turkey. I've seen quite a few come from China. And, you know, they're looking more at the Chinese medicinal herbs. But I think maybe there'll be more information out there that could be of value. This does not mean that your listeners should run out and start blending their own oils and shoving it on their chickens. These are things that are added to a diet, and it's balanced accordingly, okay? Your chickens may not touch feed that you drop essential oils on, and it's got to be the kind of essential oils that are, you know, food grade. Some of the essential oils you can go out there and buy are more for making your house smell pretty, and you really shouldn't eat them. It's all in how the oil is created. So, something for you to consider. The next study that I wanted to share with you is one that is a little bit older. I read it years ago when I was working on my master's degree. And it's the incidence of Salmonella, Campylobacter, and Clostridium perfringens in wild birds that are flying around near broiler chicken houses. And what they did is they sampled the droppings. And I found this very interesting. Of course, I did my master's on Campylobacter and Salmonella. So,
and I've actually had both of those from a Petri dish accident or something.
You have?
No, you. I was saying that and you.
Oh,
and
at different times. Yeah.
At different times, yeah, you've gotten... Mm-hmm.
So what you can do, and what these people did, is they caught these birds as they were flying around chicken houses. And one of the things is chickens, broiler chickens, are only being raised to about 6 to 8 weeks.
Yep.
You know, anything that could come in and cause massive weight loss or loss period to the flock is really a negative because it's short turnaround time. Mm-hmm. So they tell farmers, exclude wild birds from your houses. And, you know, modern-day houses are built just so that wild birds can't get in, but there's some farmers who had to make some modifications, and occasionally birds still got in because they found a gap or they made a hole. And, you know, chicken feed is a great feed for wild birds, too. And so if they can get in and out, they will try to do that. And if they do get in, they can carry in a lot of different bacteria. So this particular study went to four farms, four broiler farms during their grow outs. They went to one farm in the summer, one farm in the fall, and two farms they visited in all four seasons. They got 25 intestinal samples and fecal samples on one farm, and 24% of those were positive for salmonella, 4% were positive for campylobacter, and 28% were positive for Clostridium perfringens. Now, you haven't heard me talk as much about Clostridium perfringens, but it's an organism that basically causes the gut to become inflamed. It's called necrotic enteritis, and it can cause necrosis. It's not a lot of fun for the bird, because when your gut is inflamed, you're clearly not going to be able to absorb food. You may die. But you're going to grow more slowly until this problem passes, if you don't pass away. And, you know, that's just not going to cut it for a farmer, because he's got 6 weeks to get these birds to market, and he's depending on an average weight goal so that he can be paid accordingly. Clostridium perfringens can also cause another problem. I believe it's gangrenous dermatitis. If the birds have it on their feet and they scratch another bird, it can, you know, cause problems with the skin. So, you know, Clostridium likes a very low or no air environment. So the gut's pretty much that way. But Campylobacter hangs out there too. So these organisms can exist in the feces of wild birds, bring it to your flock, and cause problems. And a problem with Campylobacter or Salmonella in your bird might look exactly the same as Clostridium perfringens. And as we know, all three of these organisms could make you sick as well. So I always cringe a little bit when people start kissing their chickens, because I know how sick they could get. Because
as a
chickens
doctor,
don't take baths every day, not like ducks.
Now, as how do you go about, there's one thing that irritates me the most when I share something or a study or information or something, even if it's about salmonella. And like you just said, you know, you kind of cringe when you see people kissing their chickens, because, you know, how as a scientist do you deal personally, or how do you address when you've got somebody that says something like, well, I've kissed my chickens every day for 18 years and I've never gotten sick, you know, or something like that, or I've never washed my eggs and I've never gotten sick. You know, how do you address that? It's just kind of frustrating. I'm just like, okay, well, you know, Peter Brown often says,
well, number one, those are people who don't want to hear anything that you have to say in the first place. And it doesn't matter what comes out of your mouth next. They've already turned you off, and they don't care to learn.
Right.
They don't want to change, and they don't want to improve for the sake of their flock. So I don't know how much of a real advocate they are for their birds, honestly.
Right.
You know, you probably would be better off just walking away, you know, because you're like, well, you know, just say, well, you have a nice day then, and just carry on.
Alrighty.
And I personally, you know, if I'm in a situation, and I've had this happen so many times, because I'm a younger female, some of these old fellas try to come up to me and say, well, I've been doing this longer than you've been alive. And I'm like, yeah, that's nice. Tomorrow's a new day. And yep. not trying to call them dumb or anything. They just don't have the confidence to say, oh, I may be doing something wrong and I need to change.
Uh-huh.
So some people just won't listen to you, Andy. They just won't listen to you. But if you understand that, you know, as you age, your immune system changes. It's all about the dose of the bacteria you get, the season and the environment. You know, are you come down with something else that weakens your immune system? Every day is a new day. The chance is always there. And remember, the bacteria is just doing its job, which is to find a new host and reproduce.
And sometimes it does it quite well.
Yes, it does. So on some of these farms that I was talking about, some of these farms it didn't get any salmonella during certain seasons. Some of them repeatedly got the bacteria time and again. So you never know what wild birds are going to bring in. And, you know, I just wrote an article for the Delmarva Farmer. I write a monthly article for them, talking about bird feeders and keeping them clean and far away from your flock. Because there have been many times when I walk onto people's properties and there's a birdhouse right attached to the chicken coop. And the chickens are over there scratching in the bird feces. And all the chickens have CRD. I wonder where it came from. And it wasn't that these people were trying to, you know, do in their flock. They just didn't know. So for your listeners out there, if you have a bird feeder, keep it as far away from your chickens as possible because, you know, any of these bacteria could become a problem. Wild birds carry it. Viruses like fowl pox can be a problem. Avian pox and fowl pox are the same thing. So the avian pox that can wreak havoc on wild birds at bird feeders, which is well documented, can also affect your chickens. And it's not really fair to your birds because they don't know. And then, of course, mycoplasma. That can be brought in with wild birds. So put your bird feeders as far from your flock as possible.
Every time I've shared that, I don't think this is an exact. I think every single time I shared that, either in a class or on the road, or on people are like, oh, well, I've had a bird feeder in my run for you know, saying going back to that same thing. I've never had a problem. I've had a bird feeder in my backyard.
Do you
I've
check?
Had a bird feeder. I've never had. Yeah, exactly. Oh, really? When was the last time you had your chickens? Right.
Yeah. And
oh
then,
me.
So, you know, if people want to refill or clean their bird feeders have to be cleaned weekly too. But you need to do that after you do all your chicken stuff, and don't do it the same place where you clean your chicken stuff unless you disinfect that sink, you know?
Mm.
So just keep that in mind. Bird houses too. Same thing. Bird houses, same category. But they can bring in external parasites as well. Okay. Different topic.
Okay.
This one is house finches and mycoplasma at poultry rearing facilities. So, you know, you heard me talk about mycoplasma or CRD. We know that wild birds can carry mycoplasma gallisepticum, which can be a cause of CRD in chickens, but if you were to trap those birds found flying around poultry houses or feeder stations, you're going to see that when they draw blood from these birds, a lot of them will be positive. What this study did is they did a mist net trap on 17 farms and also near bird feeder stations on these farms. Now, a mist net is a really fine net, and researchers use it to trap flying mammals like bats and also birds so that they can collect information or band the birds. So it is a very effective tool and quite commonly used tool. But what these birds were, they were identified, and I believe they were sexed, and they had a little bit of blood collected from them. And they looked at these birds to see how many of them test positive. And this was over 2 years, well, almost 2 years,
wow.
A year and a half, okay? And they did, they found 11 species that were collected in Georgia. So this is your backyard, Andy.
Yes.
19.1% of the 671 birds caught at the farms, and 11.6% of the 387 birds caught at feeder sites were positive. So that means they had antibodies for Mycoplasma gallisepticum. So, you know, they used several different methods to check if the birds were positive. They found that house finches were positive, tufted titmice were positive, and, you know, these birds don't always show signs. They're non-clinical carriers of Mycoplasma gallisepticum. So please be careful around your bird feeders and take the biosecurity steps. If you're not going to clean it regularly, then when you do go to clean it, you know, suit up. Don't use the same clothes and boots and shoes that you would take over to your coop later on that day. Treat the bird feeder as a very dirty place, because nobody likes it when their chickens get sick with CRD. That's usually a kind of a nasty battle, and it's not fair to your chickens. So consider that information.
Okay.
I'm going to switch gears a little bit and talk a little bit about Artemisia. So we're moving back to a plant away from kind of a biosecurity topic. I think we hashed the biosecurity topic enough. This, again, has to do with feeding antimicrobials. That's the reason why this research was done. So what these folks did is they fed Artemisia, which is, I believe, wormwood, Artemisia annua, and they took a look at the pH of the gut. And then they also looked at some other data related to broiler chickens. So what they did is they dried the leaves of wormwood, and this is something that you can grow in your backyard, and some people do, you know, grow it kind of as a hedge or a shrub. And it does have antimicrobial properties. And they looked at particularly the cica and the lower part of the gut. And they looked at what it did to the meat. So they used 96 chickens and kept them in cages, two birds per cage. And so there were 8 replications for each treatment. And the treatments were corn soy diets. First one was the control, so it had no wormwood in it. Second one was 2% wormwood. The next one was 4% wormwood. And they fed the Artemisia leaves from day 14 until the end of grow out, which is about day 42. So the birds are 6 weeks old. So they looked at the pH of the gut contents, and they found that the pH was lowest in the birds that were fed the higher amount of Artemisia, so 4% in the diet. But the pH of the digesta in the ileum, which is the very last part of the small intestine before you reach the cica, the pH there was lowest in the group that only was fed 2% Artemisia in the diet. So some kind of mixed results there. You never know what you're going to get. That's why we do research.
Yep.
So what they did is they do something called a lipid oxidation test, and they wanted to see if the breast muscle and the thigh muscle was different between the two groups. And they compared the two groups with the control, and they found that the breast muscle and the thigh muscle had lower lipid oxidation than the control for the Artemisia 2% and Artemisia 4% diet group. And there was no difference found in the total fat content of the liver, the abdominal fat pad. If anybody of your listeners have processed their own chickens, then they know that, you know, in the abdomen towards the below the vent, there's a fat pad that can develop there, and sometimes it can be quite large. So Artemisia didn't affect the final body weight, any of the weight gain, any of the feed consumption, or the carcass weight, or the feed-to-gain ratio. There was no differences in the way that the liver, the abdominal fat, the spleen, the heart. Did the change in the pH of the gut provide a protected effect against colonizers of the gut, potentially pathogenic bacteria? If the gut is not a pleasant place for a bacteria to be, it's not going to stay there or not going to survive there. You want good bacteria to be in your chicken's gut rather than the negative, the bad bacteria. That's one of the things they're promoting in yogurt commercials. You know, I think it's Jamie Lee Curtis and her Activia commercials, which I have to chuckle at all the time. And I'm sitting there going, basically what they are is selling the thought of competitive exclusion. There's only so many slots in the gut where a bacteria can insert itself. And if that slot is filled by a good bacteria, then there's no place for the bad bacteria to go, and it's just going to get pooped right out. That's competitive exclusion. So if the gut is the right pH, then you're going to cultivate the bacteria you want and exclude the bacteria that you don't want. So that's the thinking behind this particular study. So they thought that maybe their research might prove useful using Artemisia as a natural feed additive. And there's also, you know, interesting antioxidant potentials that they probably will do another study on, find out if the antioxidants are sufficient for making changes in the birds. But thinking along those lines, I thought perhaps your listeners would find that study interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Before we go to commercial, do I have time to do one more?
Actually, I went through all of the commercials we need to do between the technical issues.
Okay.
Pardon me, in the beginning of the show. So we are all caught up and good on our commercials for today's radio show.
Okay. Sometimes I get questions on bedding, Andy.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a lot of information out there that says don't use this bedding or try using this bedding and, you know, believe what you want. But there was a study that looked at different types of bedding. Actually, my advisor, before I came to Auburn, had done some of these studies, and I was, you know, reading through them, and I came across one of them, and I was like, I wonder if any of your listeners have thought about this. So sometimes chickens get little burns on their feet because of litter that isn't clean enough. And I'm not talking bumblefoot, which is that big swelling of the foot pad. This is more of an ammonia burn because people aren't cleaning their pens enough. And in commercial industry, depending on how many birds you have, how slick the litter is, what kind of litter you're using, is it absorbent enough, how much weight are the birds, you know, putting on, how long are they on the litter. All
uh-huh.
those things play a factor in something called foot pad dermatitis.
Okay.
And that's just basically when, you know, broilers lay down a lot, right, Andy?
Oh, yeah.
They're not the marathon runners of the chicken world. And they will, you know, their feet are in contact with the ground all the time, and they don't wear shoes or socks. So if your litter isn't very absorbent, they're going to be putting their feet directly into the feces of their neighbor. And depending on the diet and how long they're in contact with that surface, eventually they may get a little scar on their foot pad. And the size of it is important because the foot pad, the foot itself is a saleable product. Paws are what they're called. So it's undesirable to have foot pad dermatitis. And so when you look at the different types of bedding, you can identify, you know, which ones are less likely to cause problems, to cause a high incidence of foot pad dermatitis. So they looked at it at different ages.
Absorbency would play a big part in that when you're
mm-hmm.
looking at the different beddings that, that backyard chicken people use. And I can't, you know, it's a dime a dozen what people use. Wood shavings, hay, wheat straw, and then, you know, a lot of folks,
sand.
You get a lot of information out there. Sand now, exactly. And I can't imagine sand being really absorbent at all.
Well,
so,
you know, water flows through sand fairly quickly.
That is true. Yeah, not absorbent, but drainage.
Mm-hmm.
Good drainage.
So the first trial that they did in this study, they looked at early exposure of the birds to high moisture used on litter. So they used 150 male broiler chicks, and they did 10 replicate pens with pine shavings, base litter, and litter in half the pens was wetted, and they used, you know, a certain amount of water to create, you know, a relative increase in moisture.
Uh-huh.
And they did that on specific days of grow out. In the second trial, they looked at the influence of late exposure to high moisture litter. And so they did, you know, again, broilers who had a certain amount of scoring on their feet, certain level of already existent foot pad scores. And they placed them in pens with used litter. Half the pens were wetted again. And so this is not so much, you know, it's basically a control versus a treatment.
Uh-huh.
The third trial, they just repeated trial two, but they used fresh and used litter, again, with that late exposure, with the already existent foot pad lesion. And then half those pens were wetted. And in the fourth trial, they used broiler chickens. They had a longer grow out, I believe. Yeah, 48 days. They looked at fresh pine shavings or screened pine shavings. They wanted a certain particle size, so half a centimeter, greater than half a centimeter or less than half a centimeter. And then they had used litter with particle size of less than half a centimeter. So they were thinking, is the size of the shaving having an effect? Is that what was hurting the bird's feet? And again, they had certain pens that were treated with water and other pens that weren't. Half of each of those pens was treated with water on certain days, again, to create high moisture. So they're using combinations of factors to see what is causing the problems. And when you have enough pens and enough replications, you can do that. You know, all the birds had the same access to food and water in each trial, the same lighting schedule. Their diets were all balanced. You know, all those things were controlled for. So, what they found was that in trial one, the early exposure trial to wet litter, that early exposure increased the number of foot pad lesions. And they looked at that on day 14. So they had 53% versus 8%. I think that's a big difference, right, Andy? 53% is a great deal more.
Absolutely. Sorry, I put myself on mute. My neighbor cranked up his leaf blower.
Oh.
So I was trying to keep the background noise down, so it took me a minute to unmute.
Oh, sorry. But when they continued that trial, excuse me. Oh, I think I better get something to drink or this is just going to continue.
Go right ahead. Folks, if you're just tuning in, we're talking with poultry scientist and professor Dr. Bridget McRae, and today's topic that we are talking about, which we have talked about before, and it ended up being great listenership, was today's topic. We are talking about poultry research translated, and so far so good. Interesting information, fascinating, really, and that can help us whether we have small flock, large flock, homestead, or not. And so we hope you enjoy what you're listening to today with Dr. McRae, PhD. All right.
Okay, thank you. So that early exposure trial, it went on until 46 days. So, like I said, early on, there was an increased incidence of foot pad lesions. But later on in the trial, it significantly reduced the proportion of birds with foot pad lesions. So there was a change over time. And that was because there was a significant increase in severe foot pad lesions in unwetted litter as compared with wetted litter. And they think that the reason is because there's a lot of factors that play into the foot pad lesions that they get. And they relate back, in this particular study, they relate it back to other research that was done. And I'm not going to go through those additional trials, but... So they basically found out in trial one that there's a whole lot more to ferret out, and so they went on to create trial two. And in trial two, the incidence of foot pad lesions on dry litter was 8%, but it was 28% on wet litter. That's when the birds were 62 days old, so this was the one with the older birds. So basically, placing birds that already had foot pad lesions on their feet increased the severity of their foot pad lesions as compared to those who were placed on wet litter. So the incidence of foot pad lesions remained high when the birds were reared on wet litter, but it was reduced on dry litter. So keeping your litter dry is the key. So if your chickens knock over your water crate a great deal, take a few moments in your daily routine and clean out that caked litter. I mean, the chickens aren't going to do the work for you. So just keep it clean and your chickens will be happy.
Exactly. Now, what about, because I'm thinking about the different way people handle their litter and people talking often about, which has become pretty popular, though, I guess it's called the deep litter method.
Mm-hmm.
They just keep adding and adding and adding.
Now,
and
this
adding
didn't
and
look
adding
at
adding.
That. This
right.
This did not look at that method. This had more to do with looking at the litter, whether it was used, whether it was wet,
uh-huh.
whether the birds already
yep.
had injuries to their feet.
Mm-hmm.
The deep litter would be its own experimental design.
Right. Okay.
But if your deep litter is wet all the time, I know you're going to have problems. Because a
right.
moist environment is where bacteria and funguses and yeast grow. And bacteria and funguses and yeast like to grow in chickens, too. So if they get a start in your litter, then they could be in your chicken. And we all want our chickens to have long, happy lives. So
Absolutely.
You want to keep them as uninfected as possible. That is your responsibility as owners. Because,
uh-huh,
you know,
uh-huh.
the chickens... we'll go around and just pick up whatever. Even paint chips, as we've discussed, right, Andy?
Oh, my gosh, yes, we have.
So yep. Trial 3, that was the trial that looked at late exposure to the high moisture fresh litter versus the used litter. And that's with birds that had both foot pad lesions already and then didn't. So this is a more complex trial. So they found that on birds that already had foot pad lesions, the incidence of foot pad lesions remained higher on used litter versus fresh litter, 78% versus 50%. And then occasionally wetting the litter didn't have an effect. Birds with severe foot pad lesion scores, so they had large lesions on their feet. The severe foot pad lesion scores increased significantly on used litter as compared with fresh litter, 42% versus 14%. And then mild foot pad lesions decreased and severe foot pad lesions increased with occasional litter wetting when the birds were about 67 days old. So, you know, that's three of the four studies that I had mentioned. And I think since that time, you know, there's been additional research done by these folks. I think one of my classmates did some work, you know, looking at feed additives to see if that had any sort of an effect on improving the bird circumstances and foot pad lesions. And, you know, I know that they did the study later on where they looked at different types, you know, of shavings versus sand. And I remember the take-home story of that was sand did a good job. But it got heavy, and it got heavy fast.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that water's got to go somewhere, and eventually you're going to have to clean it out, and it's going to weigh a whole lot more. And then what are you going to do with it?
Mm-hmm.
So keeping that in mind. Let's see, I'm looking for the last study in here. References. I'm not finding it. I think I'm searching too fast.
I hate it when that happens.
I know. Probably skipping right over it. I'm scanning and I'm going too fast here. Okay, trial 4. There we go. I knew if I slowed down, I'd be better off. Okay. So they had... they had the last trial where they looked at early exposure to high moisture litter and then occasional exposure, transient exposure to high moisture litter, and it had no significant effect on the incidence of foot pad lesions or even the severity of foot pad lesions. So that was, you know, a fairly simple study that they, the simple trial that they ended with. So take-home story is, you know, keep your pens clean. Your neighbors will be happier. You know, and we're always talking about, you know, what are some of the things you could do to keep yourself in good standing with the city? Well, keep your litter clean. And now I'm not saying going out there with a doggy pooper scooper every day and clean up, but you can if you've got the time and if you really want to. But clean your pens at least weekly, spot clean weekly, do full cleanouts monthly, and anytime you've got wet spots, you need to clean it up right away. You drop the water, you flip the water over, and you didn't do it fast enough, and you've got a wet spot. Just pick up that handful of litter and toss it outside, because you just don't want something to grow in there, even if litter's fresh and new. So, let's see, what time is it, Andy?
Oh, we can wrap up at any time.
Oh, I've got time for one more trial, right?
Oh, yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Since we've talked a lot about broiler chickens, I thought I'd go the eggshell route. So your layer listeners would be accommodated. This is taking a look at the bacterial contamination of eggshells in furnished cages versus conventional cages. And I know a lot of people don't prefer to purchase their eggs from the grocery store because those chickens are raised in cages. And conventional cages in the United States, are of a certain size and a certain design, depending on what company you purchase from. And then there was a fairly new concept at the time of furnished cages. And these might have a perch in them or a dust bathing area or a nest pad.
Lazy Boy recliner.
Well, you know, I'm not sure if you can mention brand names like that, but there could have been.
The surround sound stereo system, furnished to the T.
flat screen for chickens. There you go.
Absolutely.
The only thing they ever watch on a flat screen of chickens is chicken feed going by. I could just see them getting all excited about that and pecking at the screen. And breaking your flat screen. All right. Well, this study had 480 laying hens, and they used two types of laying hens, Highline White and Highline Brown. And they had furnished 8 hen cages or conventional 4 hen cages. And they did this trial from week 17 until week 78 for the age of the hens. And they looked at aerobic bacteria, so that's bacteria that grows in air, Enterococcus, which is a bacteria that can be found in the gut of chickens, and, get ready for this word, Enterobacteriaceae, or Aceae. And that's basically gut bacteria. And there's a lot of bacteria that fall into that category, including Salmonella, E. coli, a lot of the common bacteria that ends up on, you know, making the news. So these are gut bacteria. And they can end up on the shell of the egg because all eggs pass through the cloaca, right, Andy, on their way out?
Yeah, absolutely. That's absolutely correct.
The cloaca is Latin for sewer because there are many body systems that empty into the cloaca. There's the GI tract. There's the urinary system, and also for males and females, there's the reproductive system. So the oviduct does empty out into the cloaca before passing out through the vent and being laid into a nest box, or in this case, a cage. So they collected eggs, and they swabbed them and tried to grow the bacteria, and they found that there were no significant differences in the proportion of dirty eggs between furnished and conventional cages. And then when they compared the two types of chickens, the brown-shelled egg layers and the white-shelled egg layers, again, there was no significant difference in the proportion of dirty eggs from brown-shelled egg layers versus white-shelled egg layers. So, you know, that didn't affect bacterial contamination. Eggs produced in furnished cages had higher bacterial contamination than eggs in conventional cages, but the levels were really considered moderate in both housing systems. For some bacterial traits, an effect of sampling period was found, so they were repeatedly sampled, at this week and then this week and then this time and then this time. And so they thought that in their particular trial, they needed to repeat the work and see what the effect of sampling period was. And just so you know what a furnished cage really is, in this trial, a furnished cage was 120 centimeters by 50 centimeters. Now, in scientific studies, a lot of times work is reported in metric system, but this study was done in Sweden, so they are on the metric system. and had 8 hens. The nest box was at one end of the cage, and on top of the nest box was a litter box. And the nest was separated from the cage area by a metal sheet partition and was lined with brown artificial astroturf, so fake grass. Well, it's not even fake grass. It wasn't even grass-colored. It was brown. And there was a perch. And the perch provided 15 centimeters of perching space per hen. Okay? So there's a perch, there's a nest box, there's a litter area. And so the birds have more room to move around, and they're going to lay their eggs, hopefully, in the nest box area rather than the litter area. And in some of these furnished cages, they even had a timer so that in the morning, the nest box area opened up so the birds could lay their eggs. And then that stayed open till, you know, early afternoon where the litter box area opened up. And so there's one door which was up high blocking the litter area while the nest box area was open. And then it would just slowly close. And when it closed off the nest box area, it was opening up the litter box area at the same time. Kind of like the automatic doors
that you
see listed in different poultry magazines. So it's not so fast that it's going to chop the chicken's head off. It's going to slowly close so that if somebody's in there laying an egg or just hanging out, they can move.
And if one of those hens doesn't get in the nesting box before it actually closes for the day, you can identify her because she's over in the corner with her legs crossed going, oh, no, oh, no.
And I do think the floor is slanted so that the egg would still roll out.
I'm going to wait in there 24 hours. Oh, no.
And, you know, the European Union has different requirements for nest boxes and raising laying hens and cage sizes than we do have in the United States. So this particular study was done in 2008, it was published in 2008, so it was probably done in 2007. And that way, you know, they're trying to come up with more information related to this new housing system and get data out there so that farmers can make decisions and companies can design their cages accordingly. And that was one of the first questions. You know, you've got nest boxes where the chickens can lay eggs. Is that going to cause more bacterial contamination? Is that going to have to change how we wash the eggs? Or should we, you know, what do we have to consider? And, of course, not all countries wash the eggs like we do in the United States. So
that's correct.
But now, I don't have the Blog Talk Radio page open. Did you get any questions?
I do not. It's actually pretty slow in the chat room today. We've got lots of guests in the chat room. Hopefully they'll return and they'll register with Blog Talk Radio. They can do that with either their Facebook account or their Twitter account. And join us in the chat room where they can actually post. But a lot of guests today in the chat room that joined us wanted to hear what you had to say about the different studies that you translated for us. So very good.
Did you have any questions? Did it inspire you to do any research trials?
I don't know if it was a study, an article that came out, I guess, the last couple of weeks about refrigerating eggs and, you know, refrigeration versus non-refrigeration in Europe and how, you mentioned that they don't refrigerate their eggs too often. And I read through the article, and to me, the only deceiving thing was, because the article was spreading wildfire here in the U.S., is that I feared that we're going to have people now, because I saw anything about buying refrigerated eggs from the refrigerator in the store and then coming home and just setting them on the counter. They've already been refrigerated versus, again, getting your fresh eggs and then never being refrigerated. So I didn't see anything in there where it said, for example, I think the outcome ended up being that, you know, well, you're probably safe with fresh eggs, leaving them on the counter for 2 weeks. But I didn't see anything in there where, and so now I can see from this article that everybody was raving about, where people are going to go to the store, Winn-Dixie, Publix, Kroger. They're going to buy these eggs that are refrigerated. They're going to go home, put them in a bowl on the counter, and just leave them there for 2 weeks, even though they were already refrigerated, versus actually getting eggs from the backyard fresh from the hens or buying them at a farmer's market. They've never been refrigerated and sitting them on the counter for 2 weeks. I just envisioned after reading it, I was like, oh, my gosh, because it said the outcome was, yeah, they'll be safe for 2 weeks. And but it didn't illustrate that, you know,
that's why I, as a scientist, roll my eyes sometimes when I read these short articles, and I'm sitting there going, you can't accurately convey enough information for good decision-making with some of these articles.
Yeah, that was my whole issue about it.
Awful. Like the article you sent me about the virus.
Right, and blue eggs.
You know, it made it sound like these chickens have a virus.
It did.
Well, the retrovirus may not be there anymore, but the gene is. You know? Retroviruses can come and go. You know, the birds may have cleared the virus, you know, hundreds of years ago. And
And then you had some people that didn't read the article and said, "Well, I have arecanas, and so mine lay blue eggs. They don't have a virus." I mean, they didn't even read the article to see what it was about. Yeah, and so people were like, "Maybe you should read the article before you make a dumb comment like that." But yeah, it was interesting how a lot of people just read the headline and said, "Oh, but I have Easter eggers, or I have americanas, or I have arecanas, and so mine lay blue eggs without a virus."
Oh my goodness. Well,
yeah, it was interesting.
No.
Yeah, it was interesting.
Just means that as an extension agent, I have my work cut out for me.
Yes,
many
long years to come, and I am sure you hear many more times than I do. Well, I've done that, and I've never had a problem.
Oh my goodness!
I've licked 15 raw eggshells, and I've never gotten sick. So hey, that's,
wow.
What about
16?
Oh, my goodness gracious. You're right. They don't want to learn. They don't care. They don't like change. And they don't want to listen to what you have to say to begin with. So just thank you.
I've always
felt
so bad for those folks' chickens, because you're like, wow, is that chicken going to live 10 years less than it should?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I think Peter Brown talks about that on Mondays. He's like, you know, you may jump out of in front of a bus every single day for the last 10 years. But guess what? Tomorrow might be your day. It might be your day tomorrow. So just go ahead, keep jumping in front of the bus. But, you know.
That's a really good analogy. I like that. Go,
Peter Brown. Tomorrow might be your day. Oh, jeez. To each their own, I guess. But, hey, thank you so much for coming on. This is obviously
always a hot show. Thank you for
letting me talk. Yeah, and I appreciate it. Hot topic. And, yeah, it's always fun, and we're looking at working our way into the fall season. So, I've got to ask, because it is already coming up into October, and if memory serves, there was not a Cooptastic this past year.
There was a Cooptastic this year.
There was, so there's not one coming up, but the next year, okay. Because I wanted to make sure I marked my calendar, because I am going to get back up there. I came to I believe it was the first one. And then due to...
Well, there's some babies that come in between
that
kind of interrupt your schedule.
and delivery dates and labor pains. We're like, so maybe we're
done.
You've got to
prioritize.
Yep, and we can get back up to the next Cooptastic, which would be fun.
Will you
I
be
really
doing any book
call.
Signings up here or radio shows up here with Tractor Supply or any other group?
Not before the end of this year, but maybe into next year we'll try to get up into the Northeast, obviously not in the winter season.
They are building Tractor Supplies left and right here on Delmarva.
All over. It is absolutely crazy. But I tell you what I want to do come to, maybe based on our schedule, is I want to come have some fried chicken out of that 10-foot frying pan. Isn't it something like that? That's once a year, right? It's the poultry festival.
Delmarva Chicken Festival.
and they have like a big cast iron pan that's like 10 feet wide.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget how many hundreds of chickens that they fry up into that thing.
Oh, Lordy, a lot. Man, I don't know who the group who did it this year in Snow Hill, Maryland. You know, sometimes I can go up there and it'll be just a little bit dry or overcooked. They were just, it was spot on every time. I don't know who was in charge, but woohoo, they can do it again.
I want to know where they store this 10-foot ground pan, cast iron
I could show you,
fryer.
But then I'd have to kill you.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. I don't have enough letters after my name to know the secret. I think that's it. It's you have to be the who's who in poultry to know where this frying pan is kept year after year. Gotta love it. Well, thank you for coming on, and we look forward to seeing you back here in a couple of weeks. And if people will just give me just a second, oh nope, I've already put the jump drive out. I haven't my jump drive your schedule, so they'll just have to wait and see before what the next topic will be when we welcome poultry scientist and professor Dr. Bridget McCrae back to the radio show. So thank you very much. Hope you have a wonderful 2 weeks, and we will see you in October.
Thank you, Andy. Have a good week.
Great. Thank you so much. You do the same. And that's going to wrap up another great episode of Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. We hope you could tune in on Monday. This is it for this week. We'll take a long weekend, and I hope you will too. And I hope you enjoy your wonderful weekend. But we'll return on Monday. Great topic. Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of FirstStateVetSupply.com, getting into salmonella. Talking about, we've done shows on salmonella before, but he's adding a new twist, new studies, different types, a little bit more detailed, all about salmonella. So if you think, hey, I wash my eggs real good after they're laid before I eat them, so I don't have to worry about salmonella. There's not poop on my eggs. That's what the bloom's for, okay? That's fine. We're going to learn about that. There could be salmonella on the inside. It's in the yolk before the shell even is put around the yolk and the albumen, and it's already in there. So no matter how well you wash that egg, doesn't matter, there's salmonella on the inside. So you got to cook it, or 60 degrees, I think the number is. So talking all about salmonella, it should interest all of us who own backyard poultry. And so that's going to be this coming Monday with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. How cool is that? So again, we hope that all of you will have a wonderful and blessed weekend with your family and friends, and tune back in Monday right here on Blog Talk Radio for another great episode of Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. And again, a big, big thank you to poultry scientist and professor Dr. Bridget McCrae today. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you.